Today I want to speak to you from a series entitled Dreaming God's Dreams for Your Life. And to introduce it, though, I want to begin with this story. The date was 1944. It was at the height of World War II. A Canadian soldier from the prairies was stationed somewhere in Europe. And one day, he was asked by his superiors to do some advanced scouting just to flush out any German snipers that might be in the area. So, taking a couple of men with him, he moved out. After some time, they broke through the brush and they entered this large meadow that was carpeted with tall grass. Across the clearing, there was this grove of large trees that kind of beckoned ominously because it was prime sniper territory. So quickly whispering some instructions to his other two men, the leader cautiously edged out into the clearing alone. And slowly he advanced toward that grove of trees on the opposite side, gazing intently into that dense foliage. He watched for any movement that would indicate danger. Now, as he continued walking slowly, his partners began to edge out into the clearing as well, but one at a time, each one of them spaced a number of yards apart. And then suddenly, without warning, a shot rang out. And instinctively, this young man from Saskatchewan dove into the tall grass, waiting for the return covering fire from his two buddies. But it never came. The other two men had bolted and run. So abandoned, he began to worm his way back the way he had come, trying to let this tall grass shield his body from the eyes of the German sniper. For what seemed an eternity, he continued to hear the intermittent bark of the enemy sniper rifle again and again and again. He felt some of the bullets whiz past his ears. Others he heard thud into the ground nearby. And then, in what seemed like this bizarre exercise, he actually started counting the bullets as he slithered through the grass, wondering which one would have his number on it. He counted 10, then 20, then 30 shots. All the while, he's continuing to worm his way back. And then suddenly, as he reaches the cover of the brush once again, the last shot rings out. And he can't believe it. 40 bullets from a German sniper, and not a one had hit him. At that moment, he knew he had just witnessed God in the everyday. A God moment. A God sighting, if you will. Now, the young man who experienced that God sighting one day in 1944, that was my father-in-law, Rona's dad. And that God moment happened long before he ever became a Christian. Long before he decided to become a follower of Christ. Yet I remember him telling me, long before he became a Christian, that he thought it was God protecting him so that he might return to his family. Now, you might be asking, so what does this have to do with dreaming God's dreams for your life? Well, let me explain. You see, I think in order to dream God's dreams for our lives more effectively, both individually and corporately as a church, we need to learn to look for and recognize his presence and action in our daily lives, whether it be at home, at school, on the job, within our church family, on vacation, in our community, anywhere and everywhere. We need to look and learn to look for God in the everyday. So what I'm suggesting is this, is to dream God's dreams for our lives, we really need to look for daily God sightings. Now, to tackle this subject, we want to look at an example of a God sighting from King David's life in the Bible, so that we too will be able to discover how to both recognize and then long for daily God sightings in our own lives, making us much more aware and also willing to risk dreaming God's dreams for us individually and as a church. In your bulletins, you'll find a sermon outline. And I don't know if you're the kind of person that likes to follow along like that, but if you are, feel free to do that. If not, it's just kind of a take-home paper for you. Now, before we can look at this instance of a God sighting in David's life that I want us to go to, we actually need to go back to the beginning of David's story. And so would you turn in your Bibles once again to 1 Samuel chapter 16, the passage that was read earlier. Because you see, it's here that we discover God's long-range dreams for David's life. And if you'll recall from the reading, the prophet Samuel is asked by God to anoint a new king for Israel. And so God directs Samuel to Bethlehem, this just unassuming little town about 5 miles south of Jerusalem. And he's told to go and visit a man by the name of Jesse, because God has chosen one of Jesse's sons to be the next king of Israel. Now, listen, I got to just stop for a moment here. I was speaking in a church one time, and I had found these pictures on the internet about David's story in Lego. And I thought, hey, that's cool. The kids will like that when I put this up. And then unbeknownst to me, when I left that church a few months later, the College and Career Group gave me a copy of the Lego Bible. You can't call it the Lego Bible. It's actually called the Brick Bible, because Lego doesn't endorse it. So they gave me this wonderful 2-volume set, and it's got the entire Bible in Lego. And I just thought, what a great way for kids to learn the Bible. And by the way, any of you who likes Lego, anybody like Lego? I just want you to know, you're never too old for Lego. You never are. You aren't. It's not a kid's thing. But anyway, I thought I'd show you that so that you know where all this is coming from. So anyway, Samuel said, I want you to go visit Jesse, because I have chosen one of his sons to be the next king of Israel. So anyway, when Samuel sees the first son, and we are told this in verse 6, but he's kind of thinking, man, this is a good-looking guy. He's strong. He's big. This must be the guy. And so he says, surely the Lord's anointed stands here before the Lord. To which God replies, oh, Samuel, do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him as the future king. And then God continues by saying this, and this is kind of the paraphrase. You'll see the words up on the screen behind me, but he's saying, you know, Samuel, the Lord doesn't look at things the way you do. You know, people look at outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. He looks at the thoughts and the intentions of a person. Now, let me just stop here for a moment, just give you this brief aside. You see, when dreaming God's dreams for our lives, either corporately or individually, we need to remember that God sees us totally different than perhaps we see ourselves sometimes, or perhaps even the way others see us. Because God knows our heart. And even, you know, and even more so, he sees our potential. And so if I might be so bold, let me say that I believe God's dreams for our lives are much bigger than we could ever imagine. Because he sees us according to how we can be, not just as we are right now. And I'm a living testimony of that. If you would have told me X amount of years ago that I'd be standing here in my role as I am right now, I would have said, you know, no offense, but you're nuts, right? But when God calls, you got to answer, right? Anyway, enough of aside there. Let's move on. So one by one, beginning with the eldest, the first 7 sons of Jesse are brought before Samuel. And with each one, God says, And then Samuel asks Jesse, so are these all the sons you have? He asks that in verse 11. And then Jesse replies, well, they're still the youngest, but he's tending the sheep. In other words, you know, there's one more, Samuel, but he's not ready for this. Trust me, he's too young for this. So again, Samuel speaks and he says, well, send for him because we're not going to sit down until he arrives. So Jesse dispatches someone to get his youngest son. And when he arrives, God says to Samuel in verse 12, rise and anoint him because he's the one. And then the Bible goes on to say, so Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the presence of his brothers. And from that day on, the Spirit of the Lord came upon David in power. Now, just another brief aside. Did you notice that when you're willing to dream God's dreams for your life, that he will give you his own strength and power to see it through? If you're a follower of Jesus Christ, God's Holy Spirit will guide you, giving you his strength, his power, and the courage to do what he has called you to do. And so you can move out with confidence, with God confidence. Anyway, back to the story. It's here in this Bible reading that we've just read in 1 Samuel 16 that we see God's long-range dreams for David's life. To be the future king of Israel, replacing the current king, King Saul, who has consistently disobeyed God time and time again. Now, here's what we have to keep in mind. This dream for David's life didn't come true immediately, as many of you know. I mean, David had to endure a ton of heartache, a lot of testing, a ton of molding and shaping, And he had to go through these countless experiences of many God sightings in his life before this dream of God's was ever realized by him. Now catch this. In essence, he had to learn that the journey toward the realization of this dream of God for him was just as important to God as the end result. And that means we have to embrace the journey that God takes us on toward the dream he has for us. And a part of David's journey and a part of our journeys means being more aware of or seeing God in the moment and having the kind of eyes that can do that. In fact, I believe that's the very thing that kept David from giving up on the long-range dreams that God had for him. It was his ability to see God in the moment. Now, how do we know that? Well, turn with me now to 1 Samuel 24. Just a few pages further on, 1 Samuel 24. As we pick up the story, it's now a number of years later. Now, David is a fugitive. He's on the run from King Saul. In fact, at this very moment, he's being tracked by Saul and 3,000 of his best fighters. And by this time, Saul is completely out of touch with God. He now sees David as his enemy. And yet David has done nothing to usurp his authority. Anyway, en route to where Saul thinks David is, he stops at a place where a number of sheep pens are located. Looking for some privacy, he spots a cave near the sheep pens, and he goes in to relieve himself. Unknowingly, he chooses the very cave where David and his men are hiding. And David's men think this is it. And so they say to David in verse 4, this is the day the Lord spoke of when he said to you, David, I will give your enemy into your hands for you to deal with as you wish. But David doesn't respond like his men expect him to. Instead, he cautiously and ever so quietly creeps up to Saul unnoticed, cuts off a corner of Saul's robe and then steals quietly away into the depths of the cave once again. When Saul leaves, David also exits the cave and calls after the king, who is also his father-in-law, because David, a number of years before that, had married Saul's daughter. And he says, "My lord, the king." Now picture this. Saul turns around. I can just see the shock on his face because there's David, his perceived enemy, at the entrance to the cave he had just exited. Now at this point, David bows down and prostrates himself. He's doing it as a sign of respect for his king. And he continues in verse 9 by saying this. "Why do you listen when men say David is bent on harming you? This day you have seen with your own eyes how the Lord delivered you into my hands in the cave. Now some urged me to kill you, but I spared you because I said, I will not lift my hand against my master because he is the Lord's anointed. May the Lord judge between you and me, but my hand will not touch you." Now there's a couple of interesting points here. First, as another aside, did you notice that David lets God set the agenda and the timing for the fulfillment of God's long-range dreams for David? He lets God determine how he will someday become king. He doesn't try to speed up God's timing and help things along by killing Saul, even though Saul has tried to kill him on numerous occasions. Because he knows that's not what God has in mind here. And I think we too need to try to remember not to live outside of God's timing. That's just another aside for you. There's also another interesting point here, which illustrates what we're trying to get at today. And that's this. I believe David also recognized that he has just experienced a daily God sighting in his life. He has just witnessed the exciting intervention and care of God in the everyday. This daily God sighting that is a part of the journey that God is taking him on to prepare him to be king. Now you might be asking, well, how do we know that? Well, for one thing, David says as much when he calls out to Saul in verse 10. When he says, "Saul, this day you have seen with your own eyes how the Lord delivered you into my hands in the cave." So that's one way we know that this is a God sighting from David, for David. David alludes to it. But I believe there's another place in the Bible where we have an even clearer indication from David that this might be a God sighting. And then we also discover how it affected him deeply. It's found in Psalm 57. And this is where I believe that David journals or records this God sighting in the cave. Because we're actually told in the Bible that David wrote this psalm while hiding out in a cave. Now, even though this was not the only cave that I'm sure David found himself in his years as a fugitive, but it would be my guess that he's referring to the events that occurred in 1 Samuel 24. Let me read this psalm, and I'll have it up on the screen. You can follow along if you want. So here we see, "Have mercy on me, O God. Have mercy on me, for in you my soul takes refuge. I will take refuge in the shadow of your wings until the disaster has passed. I cry out to God Most High, to God who fulfills his purpose for me. He sends from heaven and saves me, rebuking those who hotly pursue me. God sends his love and his faithfulness. I am in the midst of lions. I lie among ravenous beasts, men whose teeth are spears and arrows, whose tongues are sharp swords. So be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth. They spread a net for my feet. I was bowed down in distress. They dug a pit in my path, but they have fallen into it themselves. My heart is steadfast, O God. My heart is steadfast. I will sing and make music. So awake, my soul. Awake, harp and lyre. I will awaken the dawn. I will praise you, O Lord, among the nations. I will sing of you among the peoples. For great is your love reaching to the heavens. Your faithfulness reaches to the skies. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth." Can't you just feel the emotion in those words? When I read that, I'm just thinking, here's a man who has clearly just seen God in the everyday. He has just experienced a daily God sighting, and it has encouraged him that God is faithful and that it pays to keep dreaming God's long-range dreams for his life, no matter what we're going through. And as a result of that, he journals the experience. And so there you have it, this example of a daily God sighting from one person in the Bible, King David. If we're going to do something really strong with this, though, we need to ask then, you know, as we attempt to apply this to our life, so where can we look for daily God sightings in our own lives? And so I want to suggest three places. There's more, but let me just suggest just three. And I believe the very first place is in our prayer life. And more specifically, the answers to our prayers. In 1 Peter 3, we read these words, For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are attentive to their prayers. God is attentive to us, friends. He does answer. Oh, I'll give you. It may not always be the answer we're looking for or expecting, but it'll be the answer that we need as he takes us on a journey through life. Now, when I think of God's sightings in my own life that have come to answers to prayer, there is one that immediately springs to mind. And it revolves around the death of my father, who died of cancer at age 48 in 1978. I was 24 at the time. Ron and I had been married for a few years. We had a small child. When my father died so young, I'll be honest, I had trouble making sense of that. Oh, you know, I didn't blame God. I didn't get angry at God. But why it happened just made no sense to me. And so I remember praying, you know, God, if just one person can come to know Jesus Christ as their Savior and Lord because of my dad's death, I'll be able to say it was worth it. And you know, you need to know that was just the prayer of a confused young man, a hurting son, just missing his father so desperately. Just wanting to know, God, where are you in all of this? Well, as the months went by, I forgot about that prayer. But God didn't. And a year later, a young lady, one of my dad's former high school students, he was a teacher, phoned up one of my brothers, Con, and said this to him. She said, you don't know me, but when your dad was alive, he used to challenge me to consider the truths about Christ. And even though I liked your father, this used to bug me because I didn't want to think about Jesus. And then I also need to tell you, and she was really embarrassed to tell us this, but she said, part of me was glad when he died because I felt like, okay, I don't have to listen to him talking about Jesus anymore. But then she said this. She said, I need to tell you something, though. His words didn't die with him. If anything, they intensified. And so I just want you to know, Con, after considering your father's challenge to me about Jesus, the other day I became a Christian. I became a follower of Christ. There's not a doubt in my mind that what I was witness to at that moment was a daily God sighting through the answered prayer of a hurting, confused young man missing his father. So let me ask you, what God sightings came to your mind as an answer to prayer as I was sharing my own story? Can you think of one? Are you ready for the next one? Another place to look for God sightings involves situations in life where God's care is just clearly evident. For example, going back to David's life, he says to God in Psalm 57:10, "For great is your love reaching to the heavens, your faithfulness reaches to the skies." It's obvious from that statement that this is a man who has experienced God's care in the moment, in past experiences and in present experiences. Now, once again, when I think back in my own life, I think back to 1983 as one example. That year, we by this time had two young kids. One was seven. The other one would have been four. We just sold our home in Prince Albert, Saskatchewan, cashed in a small pension plan that Rona had as a nurse, and we moved our family down to Regina so that we could attend our Alliance Seminary, which is now in Calgary. Now, we had no idea if Rona was going to be able to get a job as a nurse while I was going to school, and we were prepared to live off the sale of our home and this small pension plan should she be unable to get a job. You see, the goal was for me to be able to give myself fully to the training with no distractions. And Rona was willing to sacrifice that to make that happen. Well, to make a long story short, God provided Rona with a part-time nursing job that gave us between $700 and $800 a month, just enough to live on. And 2.5 years later, when we left for Ontario in our first pastorate, we still had every bit of our original savings. In spite of the fact that we had faithfully tithed 10% of our earnings to the church during that span of time and paid for my tuition and books, God provided. And I didn't know why he had provided in that way, because we were perfectly willing to take down our savings and that pension plan in order to accomplish what we felt God was calling us to. But little did we know that we would be moving to the most expensive place in Canada at the time, which was the GTA. But God knew. He knew that we would need every cent of those savings. And so God knew, and his evidence of care in our lives over those 2.5 years were just this daily God sighting. And so again, let me ask you, where can you identify where God clearly demonstrated his care for you? And are you ready for the next one? Are your eyes open? Well, let me draw your attention to one more. One more place where we can see God's sightings occur. And I think it's where we observe these unusual linkages or timings in our life. I mean, David experienced that kind of linkage in the cave, didn't he? I mean, it wasn't coincidence that Saul ended up there. It was a vaguely God sighting given for David in his provision. And so let me share one of my, you know, many such unusual linkages and timings in my life. This one goes back to 1994. Rona and I were pastoring in Alliston at the time, and we came home from Orillia, where we had spent this wonderful 3 days involved in a district workers' retreat with other pastors and their spouses. Now, even though it had been a dynamic 3 days, as we came home, I was coming home with a heavy heart. I was just in a funk, just blah. Anybody have days like that? Oh, good, I'm not alone. Now, having traveled along some rather treacherous roads that day, it was a winter storm. Anybody who's traveled Orillia to Barrie knows about that kind of a trip. I was also very, very tired. And so after unloading the car, I walked into the kitchen with Rona and we began to open the mail. And someone from the church I was pastoring at that time had sent me a card with a brief letter inside. And it was a wonderful pick-me-up. It just picked up my spirits like nothing else had lately. And the next morning, I went and found that person, and I gave him a hug. You see, I'm convinced that was a daily God sighting. the timing was just too impeccable to be anything else. By the way, I still have that card. Right here, the letter inside. Every once in a while, I pull that out when I need to be encouraged. And by the way, that lady, I have a prayer team that comes from 14 different churches. It's a prayer team of about 135 people that pray for myself, my family, and the ministry that I'm involved in. They're praying for you as a church today. They knew I was coming here, and they're praying for you. And that lady is on my prayer team. And I know she's one of 135 who's got my back in prayer. So let me ask you, what unusual linkages or timings can you identify in your own life that would appear to be a daily God sighting? And are you ready for the next one? So there you have it, three places where we can begin looking for God sightings in our life or in the life of our church corporately as well. Now, before I draw things to a close, I want to briefly talk to you about something else, though. I want to talk to us about how to stay on top of these God sightings in our lives so that we don't forget about them. In other words, how to remember them. And here's a couple of suggestions. First, maybe you will need to consider how to change the way you think about things. In other words, maybe you need to see God through the eyes of a child. Once again, I love the story in Matthew chapter 18 where Jesus is responding to his disciples who were arguing about who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Not a lot of humility in that moment. But instead of rebuking them, Jesus does something that a picture is worth a thousand words. Jesus calls a little child to him. Has this child stand among his disciples and he says, you know what? Unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. What Jesus is talking about is coming to him with the same trusting and unassuming qualities that are so evident in our children. I'm reminded of a situation with my two oldest grandchildren. They're now 15 and 13, but this is Zoe and Ethan when they were 4.5 and 2. And Ethan was going through a time where he was just scared to go up the stairs of their two-story house by himself, no matter what time of day it was. He was just scared going up those stairs. And so Zoe, 4.5, gets down in front of him one day and says, Ethan, I want to tell you something. She says, I'm sure it says in the Bible somewhere that God is everywhere. And even though you can't see him, he's still there. So I tell you what, God will walk with you up the stairs. I'll walk up with you up the stairs and everything will be okay, okay? Okay, he says. And up the stairs they went. Yeah. We need to look for God in our daily lives with that same kind of trust, that same kind of faith, those same kind of eyes, that same innocence, the same wonder, the same excitement in a child. You see, I think just far too often we as adults just kind of become a bit cynical about personal God of the Bible without even knowing it. Or because of the secular society we live in, we just become kind of the way our society thinks, and we're too secular in our thinking to easily recognize a God sighting in our lives. It's because we don't come to him like a little child. And I think when we don't do that, when we don't come to him like a little child, we then fail to dream God's dreams for our lives because our eyes aren't open to see that calling. Another way to stay on top of God's sightings. and to recognize them for what they truly are is to keep a list or a journal or a record of events. Wherever and whenever you see God interacting with your life. That's how we don't forget. Because, see, the enemy of our lives would like nothing better than to have us forget all of that. Now, if you think about it, that's really what large portions of the book of Psalms are all about, aren't they? In many cases, they're this list or a private journal, largely written by David, or at least many of the Psalms are, of God sightings. In the midst of, in this case, David's joys and struggles of his life. And so what an intimate and uplifting experience to read through those private thoughts of God's daily intervention in one man's life. You know what? I'm so glad that God inspired David to write those words. You see, I believe if we keep a list of God sightings, it will build our courage. It'll build our excitement, increase our trust in God. Just reminding us that he really is in our everyday life. And that he will see us through no matter what circumstances we are encountering at any time in our lives. One last thing. I also believe we stay on top of God's sightings and are able to remember them better when we take the time to read in the Bible about God's faithfulness to us. For example, Psalm 57 that we read earlier, we read these words again. I cry out to God Most High, to God who fulfills his purpose for me. God sends his love and his faithfulness. So I will praise you, O Lord, among the nations. I will sing of you among the peoples. For great is your love reaching to the heavens. Your faithfulness reaches to the skies. So be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth. See, when you read the Bible, looking for examples of God's faithfulness, his faithfulness in the moment, it will not only build your faith and your trust in him to act in your everyday life, but you see, once we see God in the everyday, we will more clearly be able to recognize his long-range dreams for our life as well, and then we'll be willing to journey with him with a greater sense of peace and longing and anticipation. Let me draw this to a close. And to do that, let me simply say this. Here's my encouragement to you. I would encourage you to look with new eyes, fresh eyes, at the daily activity of God interacting with you. Daily God sightings in your life. So you can see them for what they really, really are. You journeying with God moment by moment, dreaming his dreams for you and also for your church. And then here's something else. Maybe even as early as this afternoon, this evening, maybe tomorrow, maybe go home. If you've never done this before, sit down, get a pencil and paper, get out your computer, a tablet, iPhone, smartphone, and begin to say, God, I want to think back on events in my past. Perhaps you might have to look back and try to identify possible God sightings that passed you by the first time. And so you're saying, God, remind me of when you were there and I didn't see it. Either way, I would encourage you to build a list of daily God sightings in both your life and also the life of your church. Because you will need it to encourage you sometime in the future. But also, you see, if we can prepare to see those instances of God in our daily lives, seeing him in the everyday, we will also be able to dream with confidence God's dreams for our lives. And I can tell you from personal experience, there is nothing better than that. Where God has brought me right now, I feel like a round peg in a round hole, and it's just a great, great fit. Let's pray.